Hello and welcome to episode 15 of That Yoga Woman's podcast, a podcast where yogis, yoga teachers and studio owners share stories of their lives on and off the mat. I'm Jules Buchanan, a yoga teacher and your host. This week I'm talking to Sarah Holt. Sarah is founder of Serenity Yoga and is based in Hialeah, Lim and surrounds. She's been a qualified yoga teacher for 3 years, and here's a little confession. So like Emma Manning and Christina Rianoff, Sarah and I also did our 200-hour TT together. But sadly, although I've been following her on Facebook, I haven't seen her since. So I'm really keen to catch up with what she's been doing and see how she's managing with being a yoga teacher during this pandemic and lockdown. Like many of us, Sarah's been continuing to teach yoga online as the local venues she's been teaching at have been closed. Also, like many of us, Sarah became a yoga teacher after falling out of love with her previous full-time career. She experienced a real burnout and decided to do something about it in a major way. And I mean major. When we met, I was a bit in awe of her, so we'll talk about that in the podcast. As well as being a yoga teacher, Sarah is also a writer and has worked as a travel writer, everyone's dream job, right? Although currently that's on hold for obvious reasons, she'll tell us her favourite places and experiences and places we can only dream of going to right now. Sarah is also majorly into reading. I mean, she reads every book a nomination, that's the long list, and of course lots of others. We are going to get some cheeky book recommendations from her as well. I know I'm definitely in need of some. In her personal life, Sarah's engaged to Paul, and unfortunately their wedding had to be cancelled due to COVID. She's just bought a house with him and they're starting to renovate it, so we're going to be talking about home improvements as well, and Sarah's been experimenting in the kitchen during lockdown, so we'll find out what sort of concoctions she's been coming up with. And last thing, she's also into cold water swimming, which I'm also getting into. Well, I've had a dip, but we're going to talk about how she got into that and what she gets from it. So loads to get through. Everyone, I'm really pleased to introduce Sarah Holt to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Hi, Sarah. Thank you. And welcome to That Yoga Woman's podcast.
Hi, Jules. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
You look really nervous, Sarah. Chill, calm down and chill out. How are you doing? Surviving lockdown. So just to give the listeners, this has been recording and we're in full lockdown mode. So how's it going?
It's going okay. I'm not really enjoying it, but I think just trying to get through it just like everybody else and hoping that there'll be a silver lining to it soon.
Yeah, it's weird this one, isn't it? There's no novelty factor at all, is there, on this one? There was a bit in the last one. The weather was nice, we could sit outside, but this one it's cold, dark, and everyone's
just feels like Groundhog Day now.
Yep. What does a typical day of lockdown look like for you?
Well, I'm still writing. So I'm basically just doing my writing 9 to 5 freelance. And then teaching yoga twice a week at the moment, so not doing as many classes as I used to. And then at the moment, well, in the past, reading, cooking, just trying to fill the time. And at the moment, we just bought a house, so I'm doing a lot. We're spending a lot of evenings and weekends at the house.
Well, I can't wait to hear more about that. How is teaching online going for you?
It's not the same. I mean, it's really good. The people who are doing it are really enjoying it. There have been some regulars from my studio classes and community centre classes and things like that who just haven't wanted to do it, which is completely understandable. Some people don't feel like it's the same, and they'll be ready to start again after, once we're allowed back in the classrooms. But it's filling a gap. And it's going okay. I can't wait to be in the same room as people again. But it is what it is.
That's the technical side. I think we should all pat ourselves on the back a little bit, because it first sort of started, and Zoom, like I use Zoom and everything, there's so many options. Like people like, oh, I'm Facebook Living, all these sorts of things. And it was a bit of a mystery, wasn't it? I think taking a step back, we've all done pretty well, people that are teaching online, and respect to the people that aren't teaching online as well, if they've made the decision not to. It's just so hard, isn't it?
It is. And that's that you suddenly have to become a technician as well, and getting the right camera angles. And I've got my laptop. I started in the summer when it was nice and bright doing it. We changed the conservatory at the back of the house to a studio. It's got wooden floors.
Nice.
But then when it started getting darker, the lights actually in the conservatory don't work. So I had to start putting all sorts of different lighting in there. And then when it started to rain, it was like there was a stomp show on the and I, like, we were in Savasana and I was like, and just let your ankles sink into the mat. There was nothing. So then I started doing it in our living room, and that just looked completely shabby. And the dog was in there sometimes and he'd get up and try and get on the mat. And yeah, there's a lot of, I think it's that side that you're constantly thinking about, that as well as your moves, and you're trying to look and see what everyone's doing on the screen, but it's not as easy as when you're in class. So there's an awful lot more to think about, as well as just teaching your students. So,
and you're teaching twice a week, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I was doing 5 times a week for that, but just because it was just demand and it just worked better to do it twice a week.
Yeah, I found that I was teaching more, but then numbers dropped off. And I think you've got to save yourself, haven't you? You've got to protect yourself a little bit. And if the numbers aren't there, you just got to consolidate. And people were really good. Like, they knew it's not worth me doing it, so they were just like, yeah, we'll move on to another option, like we can do another night, so that's fine. Yeah. And it's good, isn't it, when you have that, because otherwise just teaching to a couple of people, it's just a bit soul destroying, isn't it?
And some people prefer it. So there's people who don't really fancy doing the whole online thing due to the technology, or they've not got space in the house. A couple of people just haven't got the space. But there are some people who are like, I love doing it online because I don't have to commute to the studio. And then afterwards you can stay in Savasana. You've got your candles there. You've got your cozy blanket. You can just stay there for another half an hour if you want, lying on your carpet.
Yeah, I have quite a few that have children, so they don't have to worry about childcare. They're just in the lounge and the kids are in bed, or, you know.
Well, I've got a couple of the people who do it with their kids now. So we've got this one lady who I think her daughter's probably about 13 or 14, and she's really enjoying it as well. So that's nice.
Oh, that is nice. Yeah. So can you take me back to your first yoga class? Can you remember it?
You know what? I think I can remember my first yoga class, but it wasn't an epiphany moment. I remember my first ever yoga class being not really enjoying it that much. It was in some sort of hall, and it was really, really slow. And I think I'd gone expecting something a little bit more challenging. So obviously I hadn't found the right class for me. And then I didn't do it for a long time, but I think probably started thinking about and enjoying yoga is when I went traveling to Australia and was doing it in like places like Byron Bay and just hopping around different studios. And but really it was when I started doing hot yoga that I was like, this is for me, I'm getting the bug for this now. It was definitely when I started doing hot yoga at Sweat
where we did our TT. I can't, it's been so long since I've been in a hot room. You made me miss it then. I just had a pang of, oh, I really want to do that.
I miss hot yoga so much. I really do.
I've not even tried to replicate it at home.
You just turned the heating right up.
I don't even want to try that. So can you tell me about your previous career? Like, before we started our TT, what can you give the listeners a bit of background about what brought you to Yoga TT and what you were doing?
So I'm professionally trained as a journalist and a features writer. I moved into, lucky enough to get to become to specialise in travel writing. So my job, I'd started writing travel features for the local daily newspaper that I was working for. Then I got a job for TUI, Thompson and First Choice, writing their in-flight magazines and their brochures. And then I got the job as an editor of a national glossy travel magazine for groups called Group Leisure and Travel. And I loved it. But it was nearly 3 years into being the editor of that magazine, and I had a big health scare. I was on a, we used to do lots of weekends away in the UK, taking readers of the magazine away to experience places. And we were in Wakefield, which, by the way, has got loads to offer. and we were...
Hang on a minute. So just to go back, Wakefield, you were taking... You're writing about the joys of Wakefield.
Yeah, and there are many joys of Wakefield.
I'm not being derogatory to Wakefield, but sorry, carry on.
What did we do? One of the things we've done, we went down this mine, which was fascinating. It was an old, so there was like tours of this mine. And I came up out of the mine and my eyes were starting to feel really funny. And I was like, oh, that's weird. I wonder if that's because I've gone underground. And then we went back to we had a tour of the cathedral in Wakefield as well. That was brilliant. We went back to the hotel we were staying at that night and we were sat down having dinner. And my eyes just started getting worse and worse. And I'd had a couple of wines and I thought, crikey, what's going on?
Yeah, literally getting a bit squiffy.
Well, it double vision, like everything, you could start to see two of things. I woke up the next morning, it was the same thing. And I went to, in the end, because I knew I couldn't drive back from Wakefield. So I went to A&E and the woman in A&E said, you need to go see your optician. And I was like, no, I've got terrible eyesight anyway. This was nothing like bad eyesight. So in the end, my brother and mum had to drive over from Manchester to rescue me and my car from Wakefield. Took me home. We went straight to the A&E at Manchester Eye Hospital. And that just basically led to, I had 2 weeks where I had complete and utter double vision. There was two of everything. It was horrible. So I had loads of tests. I was poked and prodded. Over the course of time, I had MRIs, I had CAT scans, I had needles stuck in my head to measure the electricity in my muscles and my forehead.
Wow.
And it turned out I was eventually diagnosed with a condition called myasthenia gravis, which is an autoimmune disease. It's pretty rare. At the time, when you first get diagnosed with myasthenia gravis, you don't know how bad it's going to be. So there's two forms. There's ocular and then there's the progression. If you don't know if it's going to progress until about 2 years down the line. And if it does progress, then it can be really debilitating. It can stop you from breathing sometimes. It can stop you. It affects all reflexive muscles. So your eyes, your breathing, your ability to swallow, sometimes like the rest of your muscles in your body affecting you being able to move around. So I didn't know how bad it was going to be. And I thought, I need to go. There was more of the world I needed to see.
Yeah.
So I just said to my boss, I've got to go. I don't know what's going to happen to me. I've just got to go and have some time and do a bit of exploring and try and make the most of these next couple of years. While I can. So I left my job, moved home to my mum, sold my house, sold everything in my house, just came home with my clothes and my books.
Yeah, then, so this was, you say that, like I just sold everything, but I remember I was just sitting because I was still in my corporate job and material stuff was like, oh, everything to me at that point. And I remember you saying, oh, I sold everything, I've just sold everything. I remember looking at you thinking, what? What? You've just sold everything. Like, I couldn't believe it at the time. I think that's what I remembered the most. What the hell? So, I mean, blimey, that missed a bit. Did you feel like it was a wrench or because of the health stuff were you like, no, I
didn't
need to
care
do
about anything at that point. Like, yeah. Nothing mattered apart from just being able to be free, to try and make the most of my time. And making my most of my time was not sitting on my nice sofa, going to bed, sleep in my nice bed, watching my big TV. It was getting rid of all that stuff and getting on a plane and going wherever I could. So I got rid of everything. And actually, one guy, it was brilliant. He's still my friend on Facebook, actually. He came round because he was interested in the sofa. So he brought the sofa and he's looking around my house. He's like, is that telly for sale? And I was like, yeah. He was like, right, I'll have that. What else you got? And he basically bought everything that I owned. He bought my bed, he bought a mirror, he bought my TV, he bought my sofa, he bought a table. Literally, that was it. It cleared me out. I was like, this is great.
It wasn't some psycho, was he? Like, it had been stalking you, like, sat outside your house, just waiting for you to invite him in.
No, it was great. And that all went in his daughter's brand new bedroom and stuff like that. And then I booked a holiday to Central America. Unfortunately, now I'm way past that 2 years. It's been more than 4 years, I think, since I had that first episode. And so it doesn't, touch wood, it doesn't look like it's ever going to get any worse than the ocular myasthenia gravis. I have the odd relapse every now and again when I run down, but then I get tired, but have a nap.
All right. Gosh, that's, I'm glad it must have been hard, especially initially. I don't know how you'd think of anything else. It must have been hard to put it out of your mind.
I think I've dealt better. I dealt better with that than all this COVID stuff, because I knew that was in my body. It was happening in my brain. Nothing I could do about it. So when you know that that's the case, you're like, right, you're quite pragmatic about it. There was no massive tears. It was just, it was what it was. And we were trying to go through all these different medical procedures to just see if there was anything we could do about it, see if it would get worse. But with the COVID, it's, well, you don't actually know what's happening, when it could impact your life, when it could impact those who you love. So it's much more easy to deal with something that is what it is, rather than something that you don't know.
It's constantly evolving and changing.
Yeah.
So when you'd sold everything and you started TT, obviously I know what happened then. We did our TT.
Yeah, so that's what brought me to teacher training, because I thought, well, I love yoga. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it as a freelance writer, because it's hard to, you know, get into the freelance gig. So I did the yoga because I wanted to do both.
Yeah.
Gosh, it sounds like a roundabout.
Yeah, so it's like, I wasn't sure I'd be able to do freelance writing, so I decided I'd do freelance yoga as well. Like, they both sound a bit tricky career choices to me. Did it feel brave? Did it feel brave at the time?
No, nothing felt brave. No, it just felt like the right thing to do. And I absolutely loved our teacher training.
Good,
I wish we could go back and do it again. They were such good weekends.
I know. And because I was speaking to Emma a few episodes back as well, and she said the same. So it's good to be catching up with you now. So after TT, what happened next for you? Because I think this is the first time we've spoken. I've been keeping an eye on you on the old Facebook.
Yeah.
But what's happened? What did you do straight away after TT? Did you work at a couple of local studios?
So that's when I went traveling immediately afterwards, once we'd graduated. And then I started working at a couple of studios in our local hot studio. And then I started started two classes at the rugby club, working with the rugby players and just the members of the rugby club. And then I put on another couple of classes in like the local village where I live as well, doing all sorts of different things.
Yeah, nice mix. And how was the rugby guys? Did you approach them? Did they welcome you with open arms? Like, how did that start off?
Well, my fiance is a rugby player, so he was dead keen to get into it. And then he basically sort of said to all the boys, "You need to do this. Like, England rugby players do this. You need to give it a go." So yeah, it was good. It was good fun. The first class, they'd all been in the gym beforehand because they were like, how hard can yoga be? And by the end of it, they were all huffing and puffing and completely exhausted. And just like, wow, this is quite hard.
Good. Yeah, they thought it was going to be super easy. And then you're like, no, you can't lift your arm up over your head. You need to work on your mobility. So, and your community classes, the guys from the village hall, Have they carried on with you? Have they been quite supportive of your online classes? I know we touched on that a little bit earlier, but
yeah,
have you had support from rugby and your community classes?
Yeah, a bit of everyone really. It's not really varied from which we've just got a really nice group of regulars now who've come from all those different classes, and they're doing really well. The progress they're making is fantastic. It's really good to watch, and it's lovely to see the same faces every week and.
Yeah, a little sense of community.
Yeah.
And in terms of your workload, how much at the... Well, normally, talk about before pandemic, How did it work with the writing and yoga?
It was basically, yeah, so writing all day, teaching yoga in the evening.
Yoga all
and
night.
Weekend. Yeah, that was it. Pretty much, yeah.
And you said it was tricky to make it as a freelance writer, but it's still happening now. So you must have got a big success. Was it contacts that you'd made previously? How do you start? Because it must be hard to get the word out there that you are.
Yeah, it's all just about a bit like being a freelance yoga teacher, really. It's just all about making contacts, getting good relationships started, letting people know what you can do. And then you bashing your head, you know, just pitching, networking, and then something comes in out of the blue and like, oh, that's excellent.
Mm-hmm. And
it's never a direct, stuff always comes in around the houses, which is really nice.
And travel writing is pretty much, I would imagine it's pretty much everyone's dream job. So like how do you think that? I know you love traveling. We'll talk about this a little later. You love traveling so much. And the fact that you're a writer, it's like a blend of both worlds.
Yeah. And the thing about that, it's not just travel reviews that I do. It's travel copywriting as well. So basically you're given, like I used to do for TUI, where you write the in-flight, the holiday brochures, you know, you get given all the details and then you have to research it and write about what's there, as opposed to saying what you did while you were there.
Mm.
But there's so many words. The great thing about travel writing is there's so many words that you can use to describe. So it's a different sort. It's the best sort of writing apart from fiction writing, because there's a huge amount of words in the dictionary that you can use. Whereas if you're writing about something like technology, it's there's not many words you can use to describe a server, you know. It's not many metaphors or similes.
So. I love the fact that that's how you would approach writing, like that's how your mind looks at it, like the broad range of words you can use. Like
love
it's just
words.
I think that's why you're a writer. I wouldn't have thought of it like that, so that's a really unique to me, but I think it's an interesting perspective on how you see writing.
I love words. Mm.
And did I see that you'd written a novel?
I have. I wrote a novel before I met you. It was published when I was 30, I think.
Wow.
It's called Love and Eskimo Snow.
Oh, that's clever, clever. And have you got any more on the go?
Written another two since, but I wrote the first one and then got the idea for the third one. And then didn't really bother doing anything with the second one, but now both are written and I'm starting to send them out to agents, which is the worst part.
Do you even hear back?
Not always. No, normally it's a thanks but no thanks. Sometimes it's a never gonna get in touch with you. So, but you just got, it's horrible, but you've just got to keep bashing your head against a brick wall until one of the bricks falls out and then someone pokes their head through and goes, I'll give you a deal.
And because I've heard like a friend's done this and she self-published. So is that a thing? Like it would seem you have to put a lot of money in. How do you get out there? I always have thought like going to the publishers is still like your preferred route. Self-publishing seems a bit of a desperate.
I don't like to say that because self-publishing has come a long way, but you do get a lot of people turning to self-publishing who are just not the best. At least with...
So diplomatic. They're not the best.
At least with agents and publishers, you know that you're getting no's for a reason. It's not for that person. It's not for their publishing company. If you do get a deal through this hard, hard route, then you know that you've got something good. And I'm not going to... I will wait till I've exhausted that avenue before I would even consider self-publishing. And I might never consider that because I don't know. I don't feel if my novel's not taken up by somebody, I don't know. But then there's plenty of authors who get amazing, you know, they've got amazing books that get overlooked by all agents, and then they self-publish and their books are fantastic. So It's a huge debate that.
It's interesting, isn't it? So interesting. So, and also, I know that you read as much as you write, or you're an avid reader, aren't you?
I'm a bookworm. Yes, I just love books. Yeah, there's nothing better than curling up with a book. Sometimes a cup of coffee, sometimes a cup of tea, a couple of biscuits, sometimes a glass of wine.
So whatever the beverage, it's a book. And are you a proper book person, or are you a Kindle person?
Oh, no.
That was a stupid question. I knew as soon as I asked it.
I don't agree with Kindles at all. I'll tell you why. Number one, you can't get a Kindle signed. And if you do, you can never use it again. You can't smell a Kindle.
Well, you can, but they don't smell of anything.
Well, yeah, you can give it a go. And you can't put the beauty that is a bookshelf. Like, during lockdown, how many people have started having their Zoom meetings in front of bookshelves? And you're always like, there's actually an amazing Twitter account. Can't remember what it's called. This is a Sarah story. I've always got these Sarah stories. There's a Twitter account, but I can't remember what it's called, but it's really good. But there's a Twitter account. I think it's about, oh gosh, I'll have to let you know after this, but it's about the backgrounds of people's Zoom calls, and they like the famous people, like the president and Mariah Carey, and they're analysing what books they've got on their shelves. It's brilliant. But yeah, you can't have, like, the best thing in a house is a bookshelf.
says the writer and the reader. Oh, I love that. So I know that you challenge yourself. Well, I don't know if it's a challenge knowing how much you read, but do you read like nominated lists each year, don't you? Can you tell a bit more about that and what your process is?
The Booker Prize. So I love the Booker Prize. And so the Booker Prize long list is announced June-ish every year. And there's usually 12 books on it. And I read all of them. And then usually the shortlist is announced around September. It was later this year. And then the winners announced in October, November. I think it was November this year. And in past years, for the past sort of 6 years, they do the shortlisted authors do a reading. They go to the stage in the South Bank Centre. They read a bit of their book. Then you ask questions. Then you queue up afterwards and get your book signed. And I go down to that every year. But this year it was online, which is such a shame because I didn't get my book signed. But it's just great. The great thing about reading the book along list is it encourages you to read books that you would never normally pick up. It's such a diverse collection of books. Obviously some of the greatest literary talent in the world. So it's really inspiring. Some of them are hard going, I'm not going to lie. And you don't always enjoy all of them, but it gives you a wider appreciation of what a book can be.
So do you manage to complete your the reading list between that June to September window?
No, not always.
Okay.
So sometimes I'll get to the shortlist and I'll have read a good amount of the shortlist already, but sometimes I'll get to the shortlist and I'll have read, like, say, seven of the long list, and then the shortlist happens to be all the ones that weren't on the other ones that I've not read. But I always get there in the end.
Oh, that's so good. I think, and I might try that. I might try that this year.
It's a great exercise. And also it really makes you dedicated to the books. You're like, I've got to get through this list.
And where do you stand on audiobooks? I think this is probably...
Well, I struggle with audio. The thing I like about a book is I can read a sentence, and if I want to think about that sentence and where it takes me, then I can mull over it for a little while. But in an audiobook, you've got to keep up with the pace of the reader.
Yeah.
So I do struggle with that sort of taking information in audibly.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's the voice as well. Some people's voices are so lovely to listen to. I listened to, because I walk the dog a lot, and I went through a period of audible Audible books, and Oprah's one was really good, and she was so passionate when she was reading. It was so, and her voice is lovely. And I was, and then I read another one. I didn't read it; I listened to it. And the author read it, and it's like, you shouldn't have done that. She had an awful voice. Says me, the Brummy, but it's like her voice was really grating, and I was like, oh, and she didn't have any expression. She was literally just reading it, and it was also, it really depends on who's reading it, I think, as well.
And I think you like to come up with ideas of who the characters are in your head, and if someone's voice is, someone's voice can influence that, I think. So yeah, I'm an old school paper, yeah, bookshelf girl.
What about genre?
I'll read anything. I started a book club a year ago. So we try and read all sorts of things. I have to say, it's not my favourite. Thrillers aren't my favourite, and crime aren't my favourite. My favourite sort of thing to read is, I love dystopian fiction. I love women's fiction. I love contemporary literary fiction. They're my faves, probably.
And have you got any recommendations? Because for me, I just really struggle to know where to start, because there's so many, and you can't just look at I'm going to say it. You always judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, you do.
That's exactly
what
happened.
Even I do, to be fair.
I don't want to just look at the cover and think, oh, that looks all right. But where do you start? Like, what have you got recommendations for a few good books that we can read?
Recent ones, my two favourite books of recent years were Elizabeth Oliphant is Completely Fine. Or is it Eleanor? Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine. Might be Elizabeth. And Where the Crawdads Sing. Love those two books.
Okay, hang on. Is Completely Fine. Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine. That's the name of the book. Okay.
It might be Elizabeth. This is terrible. I can't remember now.
And what's the other one?
Where the Crawdads Sing.
Crawdads.
Yeah, okay. Crawdads.
Okay, I'll put that in the
I would also notes. Encourage you to read the winner of the book of this year, which is called Shuggie Bain.
Shuggie Bain, right.
Which is set in Glasgow. It's brilliant.
Is it written in the style of Trainspotting? He's hard to read.
No, it's really easy to read. It's a really sad story in a lot of ways, but there's a lot of hope and beautiful writing in it as well. So,
oh, thanks for the recommendations. Thank you. And so moving on to travel, I know it's really hard to talk about it at the minute because we can't.
Oh my God. Honestly, I feel like I've had my wings sawn off.
Yeah, they're not even clipped. They've gone.
Not even clipped, they've gone. Need to grow back.
I mean, I feel pretty well travelled, but you are a legend as far as travelling goes. And it's not like just, oh, I've been there. But you find all these unusual places. I guess it's because of your work, but you find all places that I'd never even heard of. And it's stunning, and stunning places. You were wine tasting. Like, well, give us a flavour. Where have you been? Where have you been?
Oh my goodness. Well, I did actually manage. I was really upset last year because I thought I'd not managed to get anywhere, but I did manage to get to four places last year, but randomly. But I've been to 60 countries altogether.
I was going to ask you how many countries.
There's still another 132 to go.
Wow.
So I've still got a long way to go. But I've not explored a lot of Asia. That is a not done much of that, but my favorite places, you probably say, I love Central America. Panama is an amazing country. Costa Rica is an amazing country. I love Cuba. I had an amazing time in Bosnia the year before last now. Sarajevo is the most, you're not in London anymore, near London anymore, but there used to be direct flights. They started in 2019 from London to Sarajevo. Sarajevo is such an awesome city. It's beautiful. Half of it is all like sort of Ottoman influences. The other half is all like Venetian influences. It's in this bowl of a valley, and it looks a bit like something you'd think of from Austria around it. It's got this awesome, it's where the Winter Olympics were held, and there's a broken bobsleigh track up into the mountains that you can walk down, get the cable car up. It's just stunning, and considering what they went through in that city, it is such a happy, hopeful, the people in that city are they set an example of how humans can thrive in the face of adversity and survive, and not just survive, but survive well.
I mean, that's it. And it is the people, I guess, that make a place, isn't it?
It's such an inclusive, welcoming city. Half of it's dry, so you can't get alcohol there. The other half sells alcohol, but in the middle, there's a mosque, there's a synagogue, there's a church. Everyone just lives happily together. It's lovely.
Any other places that you'd recommend?
Serbia. I went to Belgrade in Serbia. That's a really cool city. That's really buzzy. Lots of pavement cafes, museums, galleries, lovely cocktail bars there.
This is just depressing, isn't it, talking about it? I'm like, oh, cocktail bars. I love those.
What's a cocktail bar?
It's not the same. You can do stuff in your kitchen.
Oh,
all these
rubbish.
Kitchen discos, it's just not the same.
Oh, I've had enough of that. Rubbish. Cocktails in the can? No.
Well, I would say that a G&T in a can is acceptable only when on a train.
Yes.
I will often be found drinking G&T diet, slimline G&T out of a can, preferably from Marks and Spencer's. They seem to be quite strong. The gin and tonics in cans are available. On the train. That's what I like to do. But yep. I have been on a train since March, so that's the end of that. God. So when did the travel bug get you? Like, have you always loved to travel? Or was it to do with the... Well, I guess you tell me.
I didn't go abroad until I was 15 was my first abroad holiday. We went to Greece. But then it was really when... after my A-levels, I worked in a pub with a girl and she was like, let's go travelling, let's go to Australia. And I was like, all right, well, I've got the whole summer before I go to uni, let's do it. And then, so we booked the flights, we were just going to go over there. And well, I knew where we were going. I'd like got the Lonely Planet and looked at where we would eventually end up. We hadn't booked anywhere. And then she decided she wasn't going to go. I was like, oh no.
No, so really?
I was 17, I went by myself. I was 18. I was 18 by then. Just turned 18. And so I went by myself. And it was just the best experience ever. I was never alone, met some amazing people, had such a good time, and that was it. My backpack was my best mate after that. It was just like the hug you get from a backpack. There's nothing quite like it when you put it on. When you put those straps round your tummy and across your shoulders, it's like a big hug. Love it.
I can't believe it. I'm going to look at my backpack in a totally different way. I do love it. I love my backpack. It's a North Face one and it is, think it's the best bag in the world.
Exactly. You love your backpack. And especially, you know what, I might go put it on. Just later.
Just to make you feel good.
I've not had a hug from anyone apart from my fiancé for nearly a year. So I might just go put it on, just walk around my house in it.
Where is on your list? Like next, where are you going to go first as soon as you were allowed to go?
Well, I'm hoping that we get to have our honeymoon this year and go to, I've never been to South Africa. And I love wine, although it doesn't love me. And so I'd love to go to get to see Table Mountain, to go to the vineyards of South Africa. I'd love to go onwards up to like Namibia, Zambia, see like the Skeleton Coast and all that wildness and see more of Africa. I don't really know what the situation is in Africa at the moment. So I don't know how long it'll be. I mean, South Africa's okay, I think. But I'd love to see more of Africa. Let's take COVID out of the equation. I'd love to see more of Africa. Gambia is an amazing country. I've been there. That's so beautiful. So more of Africa, desperate to see that. I really want to go to Iceland. Really want to see all the landscapes there.
I have to chip in there. I've been to Iceland. I'm quite pleased that I've been somewhere that you haven't been. I wasn't going to say anything because it sounds really knobby of me.
Where did you stay in Reykjavik?
Yeah, we stayed in the main drag in Reykjavik.
You didn't see the Northern Lights, did you?
We did. Well, I'll tell you, it is quite a funny story. We'd been out on a few trips. It was like a long, long weekend because it's so expensive. We went on a long weekend and we'd been on a few trips out, and some of them we'd get up really early so that it was dark and we thought, oh, maybe we'll see the lights. Some of them we'd come back late again, oh, might see the lights. And we had a cycling trip one night in the snow. It was snowing and it was snow on the ground. And we stopped outside Bjork's house. The guy was like, that's where Bjork lives. It was like, oh, I was so excited. Anyway, we were at the end of the trip. We were in a bar and we were like, oh, we didn't see the lights. Never mind. You know, you can't make them just come out when you want to. And we're sat in this bar and then there's a couple outside. There's us and another couple in the bar. There was a couple walking past pointing and looking. There was only one thing they could be looking up at. So we legged it out with this other couple, ran out, and we saw just the green faint dancing. And we were like, oh.
Was that actually in Reykjavik itself?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, they're not supposed to be that common in Reykjavik. That's amazing.
We'd kind of given up. So
are you sure you haven't had one too many absinthe?
No, it wasn't. But it was only really faint. I'm not saying it was only very faint and it was so short. So it wasn't like a massive spectacle. Yeah. But it was quite funny because these tourists were coming past and we were like, oh, and then they were like, what? We were like, the lights. And then by the time they'd all looked, it had gone and they couldn't believe it. And we got a camera footage, so we showed them and they were like, oh, can you send it? And it's like, well, we can, but you didn't see them. So you can just tell people you saw them, like, what do you do? But we were well happy with that. It was just ticked a box on our, but apparently you can see them in Northumberland where I now live.
Yeah, you can. There's dark sky parks up near you as well, which you can go and see the stars and stuff.
Well, I've, funny you should say that, I've booked us to go away when we're allowed to, it sounds dodgy now, it's like a pub, but they do, it's by Hadrian's Wall, it's like a dark sky area, so I've booked us
beautiful.
In.
So I love staying in pubs, it's so cosy.
Well, I'm hoping, it's a pub and it's like, it was a sleep, supper and stars was their
little
thing.
You'll have to send me links to that. I'll be interested in that.
I'm just hoping that we get to go this year. So that's on our list.
I love exploring anywhere. Anywhere, even the UK, there's some amazing places to visit. Just getting out. Wow.
I saw your article that you put on Facebook. Tell us a bit about that for the Mail Online. So yeah, you're going to say which one then, weren't you? The Mail Online one, you know the one where it's, go on, tell us.
The new hotels.
Yeah.
New hotels, yeah. So that was just a roundup of new places that are opening in the UK this year. I've been working I've written more than 100 articles for the travel desk for Mail Online now. Started just doing it as a freelance and then I do shifts every now and again for them. But I used to go down to London to do it. But now I've been able to do it online, which is really digitally, which is really good. I really enjoy it.
And the places in that. I mean, have you been to those then?
No, they're just opening. That was like a preview. So I was looking at all the pictures. So no, I've not been to any of those.
They look so amazing, like really, really top end.
Yeah, yeah. Some gorgeous like that. The hotel that's opening in Bodmin Drail. That looks lovely. Some really cool places.
So where are your top five places then for you? Not that you necessarily recommend for other people, but your top five places.
Mine. So Cuba, Panama, Costa Rica. Oh, this is running out now. Bosnia. And I love Norway, but I'm not going to say Norway. I love Australia. You can't really beat the place that gave you your first travel experience. And I love Australia. That's my choice, but ask me tomorrow, I might come up with a different list.
I'm sure you will. So the man you're sharing most of these trips with, Paul, you've recently got engaged. How did you meet him? You said he was into rugby.
I've known him since I was a barmaid, actually. We knew each other when I was 18 and it was when I came back home to live back up north after my health scare that we kind of started seeing each other again, and that was it really.
And how did he propose? Was it during COVID? Was it before COVID?
No, it was before. It was the Christmas before everything went wrong. No, it wasn't. It was the year before that. We engaged a good year because we were supposed to get married last year. So we were giving ourselves like nearly 2 years. No, it wasn't a very romantic proposal. We were just in our favourite bar.
Oh.
That was it. There was no knee. There wasn't even a ring, but it was lovely. There was champagne afterwards, let's put it that way. It was lovely.
Oh, that's all right. And then you said you're supposed to get married last year. Was it all planned?
It was.
A nightmare. I mean, thing is, it's hard, isn't it? Because you don't want a pity. No one wants a pity party because there's people. We all know there's people going with all things happening. Yeah. So just to precursor any of this conversation with that, you know, people are going through the most awful time. But cancelling your wedding is pretty crap
isn't it? Disappointing. You're right. No, you know, life could have been so much worse, but it was really disappointing. But fortunately, we were planning a really, we didn't want to spend a fortune on a wedding because it's crazy the amounts people spend on weddings these days. So we tried to keep to a budget. So that meant that we had, you know, we hadn't booked in. We were getting married. Our party was going to be at a village hall, beautiful little cute village hall in the countryside. So they only did 4 weddings a year. So we were able to move the date for that. That wasn't a problem. People have had massive problems with like booking in these big stately homes and they're booked up 3 years in advance and then they've had nightmares. But it was really easy to move it. It was just more disappointing, but we had a lovely unwedding day.
Oh,
so it was really nice. We had a little barbecue, we bought each other presents. It was a beautiful sunny day, which is slightly disappointing because that would have been the day we got married, but I bet it rains next year, but this year if it goes ahead.
So did you just change the date to a whole year later, just exactly the same date but a year?
We couldn't do the exact same date a year later because the village hall had a car rally booked in. So we've moved it to the 5th of June, but whether it'll go ahead, I don't know. We'll see in the coming weeks what happens.
Still quite early to say, isn't it, at the minute?
It is, yeah. But it's a Mad Hatter's theme wedding.
I didn't know it was a theme.
Yeah.
Do people have to dress up?
No, but they can if they want, but we've got some amazing centerpieces and which my auntie has made. She's amazing. I was just because we're going to do it on a budget, I was just going to throw some playing cards in the middle of the tables for everybody, but she's since made these incredible centerpieces out of teacups and all sorts of stuff. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a little, instead of having a you know, the usual wedding breakfast of like lamb and tomato soup, we're having an afternoon tea instead.
Oh, nice. So it is a theme then. I get it now. Yeah. I understand a bit now. Okay. So, and you've just bought a house together?
Yes.
How was that searching process and everything with lockdowns looming and stuff? Was it quite straightforward?
We have been looking for a house since we got engaged, really. Well, yeah, to buy a house since we got engaged. But there's not a lot of places in our budget that comes up where we live. But we put the offer on this in the summer and then it felt someone else put a higher offer in, so we lost it, and then those people pulled out, so we got the keys on the 18th of December.
Yes, that's nice. So not exactly in before Christmas, because I gather there's quite a bit of work to do, is that right?
Yes, so we're still in the house, we've not moved in yet because there's loads of work to do, but it's exciting. It's lovely to have a distraction and a project, and it's great to get stuck in and to start slowly seeing things changing.
And is there a lot of work to do? Are you planning to do most of it yourself?
We're planning on doing most of it ourselves. My fiance knocked a few walls down last weekend under guidance from, you know, we had the builder's guidance, but he got stuck in and properly knocked. I was in the kitchen downstairs painting. I was just shivering in the corner like, oh, please don't let the house fall down. But it was okay.
It's scary with stuff like that, isn't it? It's quite scary with like
wall. Crikey. But he just got stuck in, which was great. While I was just trying to remove another layer of gloss from the skirting boards.
Oh, and we did talk about a little bit about this before we started talking recording, because I'm doing work on our house as well now that we've moved, and I realised I'm a bit of a gloss over. I'll gloss over gloss, hoping that it's going to make everything better. And even before we spoke, I saw an Instagram post about this. Like, someone had said, like, more white gloss isn't helping. And I thought, oh, that's the... I fell into that trap of just glossing on. More gloss will make it all good. And you're right. I need to...
And I hate wood chip. Oh, my goodness.
I don't have any of that, thankfully.
So lucky. It is so hard to get off the walls. It's like a workout.
If you've not got a steamer, like
that doesn't even take the edge off.
You're like, oh, we've tried that. That's just laughing in the face of your steam.
Steamer.
And before the move, because now you're just going to be eating builder's dust, or your fiance's dust. It's just going to be dust sandwiches for you right now. But before the move, you were starting to do a bit of kitchen concoctions.
Well, I love cooking. And actually, last week, on Friday, not the week just passed, but the one before that, we were in the house when I wasn't teaching yoga every night, getting back late, and then putting things like pizzas in the oven, which I love a pizza, don't get me wrong, it's one of my faves. But when you're eating beige food every night because it's quick, so on Sunday I was like, right, not having this anymore. So I spent Sunday night batch cooking, which is the first time I've ever done it, and it was really satisfying because every night we've got back either from yoga or from doing the house up this week, we've had a lovely meal to come back to. It's been lush.
So just to explain how you would do that, because in my mind, you would just do a massive bolognese, but then you've just got bolognese all week. That's obviously not what you did. So how did you do that?
I did five different things on Sunday night, but each one took about 15 minutes. So I was doing it for more than 2 hours, but you get a sense of achievement. You're like, one down, next one. What, rinse out your wok. So there was a bit of a theme. We had three different mince dishes, but they were completely different dishes. And then we had like a gumbo, and we had a pit beans as well, which are really nice.
And what are you most proud of creating? Like, you always like cooking then?
I hate baking. I'm rubbish at baking because you actually have to follow the guidelines for recipes. I've had some terrible baking disasters.
At least you try. I'm of the same ilk. I like cooking, but I'm not a baker.
No,
and I don't even try. It sounds too technical. I don't want it to. I think it's Bake Off. I've never even watched Bake Off.
I don't really.
I always hear about the disasters, and I don't want to put all that time and love into something for it to just not rise or whatever. So no,
definitely. I don't bake. Right. Probably once a year, I have a go at it, thinking I'm going to get it right this time, and it's always a disaster. So. But the great thing about cooking is you improvise, don't you? It's an art. You're just like, oh, I'll just throw a bit of this in.
What are you proud of creating then?
I really like, and I guess this is like a travel-y thing, I like cooking things that remind me of like different places in the world. So I love, one of my favorite things to cook is a picadillo, which is like a Cuban beef recipe. You're meant to make it with pork and beef, but I don't really like pork. So it's like a Cuban take on chili. So instead of tomatoes, instead of red wine, you use white wine. Instead of kidney beans, you put capers and olives in there. And instead of using like in a chili, you'd use like paprika and cumin. You use cayenne pepper and what else did I put in there? Can't remember what else, but it is lovely. It's lovely. That's a really nice dish.
Nigella.
I'm not making like fricassees and jus and panna cotta. I don't know. I'm not mists and steams and
foams
like they do on MasterChef. I'm not MasterChef. I'm making.
I love watching MasterChef, though.
I love MasterChef.
when it was on last, we would watch it and we'd eat. Well, actually, in the new house, we're eating at the dining room table and then we'll watch a bit of telly. It's a revolution. It's quite nice to do.
I bet, yeah.
We used to just eat watching the telly and we'd love watching MasterChef. And you could see my husband be looking at the screen and then looking at what he'd got. And I'd just be thinking, well, you'll like it because I'm not going to start doing. We haven't got an sous vide. We haven't got a sous vide.
Yes.
I'm not going to start doing cooking things in water baths for you.
I know. Well, my fiance is quite happy with his hearty piles of food on plates. Flavoursome,
that's it.
Yeah. What else do you get on MasterChef? Some of the lingus. Again, the words on MasterChef really make me laugh, like the things they call things. It's gravy. Sauce.
Yes, sauce, gravy. I don't like it how they say enjoy. They always say enjoy. Why don't they? What happened to it or your food? Or it's just like enjoy. It's like hope you enjoy it. I'd say that. I hope you really like it. It's just like enjoy. I don't know where that's come from. I wish it'd go away again. So, lastly, I'd like you to talk to me, please, about your swimming exploits.
Ooh, yeah.
Because I think it's quite a popular thing at the minute, isn't it? It seems to be. A lot of people have taken to the open water and you're one of them. Can you tell me a bit about how you got into it, into the water?
Into.
I'm quite pleased with that.
Nice little
segue.
I love swimming. And during the first and second, not the first lockdown because the gyms are closed, but the second restrictions, I went swimming every day inside in a beautiful
waterfall
in the baths. And it just really, swimming, it's a bit like yoga. It's one of the only sort of forms of exercise. I know people go running and they say they tune out and they're in the zone. Well, that has never happened to me when I run because I run like a penguin. And I just hate every second of it. Sometimes I've actually cried running, just thinking I just don't like it. That happened when I was training for the triathlon. I was just like, I was running and crying. Anyway, swimming, like yoga, when you're doing your own practice, you just suddenly are in this dreamy space. All the thoughts are gone from your head. All you can feel is your breath, the water, the colours in the water. So if there's like light coming through, you just disappear and you get out and you just feel so light, and so all those endorphins are rushing through your body. So when they shut the pools again just before Christmas, I was like, well, not, it was about start of November, end of October, was it? And I was like, I can't give up my swimming. So I thought, well, I'll go and have a go in the lake. So I bought myself a wetsuit. Now I get cold so easily. I love being warm. I hate being cold. It makes me grumpy. But there's something different about putting yourself in the cold water. You just got to get in. And again, there's a lot about cold water swimming to do with your breath, a lot like yoga. You control a lot to do with your body using your breath. So the first thing you do when you get plunged into cold water is you instantly breathe in. So you've got to control that breath to make sure that you're in a safe place when you do that first breath, that you're not jumping in, for example, coming up, swallowing a load of water. So you have to walk in. And then I'm reading the Wim Hof method at the moment, which is about how you warm your body up with your breath, but that you do that in yoga anyway. And it's just wonderful. It's just lovely to be, yes, it is freezing when you first get in, but you soon warm up while you're in the water. And just be in nature, to be out of that box that you're pretty much stuck in all the time at the moment, to have, especially on a lovely bright days, you've got the blue sky above you, you just feel really alive. And it's just great. You don't look forward to it. You think, what am I doing on the way every single time? You're like, what am I doing? But when you're in there, it's amazing. Once you've got over the initial shock, and when you get out, you feel amazing. It's very addictive.
And what gear do you have? So you've got a wetsuit. If you've got like boots and gloves as well, what have you got?
So my wetsuit is 3 millimeters. I could probably at this time of year do with a 5 millimeter, but then that restricts your movement. Always try and wear a, I put at the moment, well, now it's getting colder, I put a swimming cap and a bobble cap on, because all you lose most of your heat out your head. And I do have gloves. Some people wear two lots of gloves at this time of year. I wouldn't be averse to wearing another pair. People say that we're not, you know, there are people who go in their swimsuits and they are like amazing and they think we're cheating, but I'll take any cheat right now. And I've got a pair of shoes as well. You do need the gloves and shoes, what I do at this time of year, because your hands get so cold. That's when you feel like they get painful, and that's when you feel like you have to get out. But it's just about doing it safely and knowing your limits, and just feeling a little bit alive, like you're doing something.
I did go in, because since we moved up, obviously we've got the bay right there. So I did go in, and again, I wetsuited up. It's an old wetsuit. I don't even know what millimetre is. It's thick, but it's got, the mobility's not bad. I thought I could swim in it. It's not too bad. But yeah, I had boots, but I didn't have any gloves. So my husband gave me some, I don't know, it's from ones he used for cycling. No good, and it just was soaked through, and I was the fingers were freezing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I can't imagine going in with like just a bathing, like a swimming costume on. But yeah, I didn't have a hat or anything, so I need to get a bit more.
Hat is essential. Also, for Christmas, I got a dry robe, which are a dream. So they are like big, like a black, it's like a tent really.
Yeah, I've seen those. People have said, because they're really expensive, aren't they, the proper ones? But I think you can, people say, or you can just sort of sew a bit of beach towel together and that'll do the job.
These are windproof as well.
They look amazing.
They make a massive difference, actually, a huge difference, because you get to the water and you're not cold already, so your body temperature hasn't started to dip. And then you get out, and as long as you take everything wet off immediately, you can just be naked underneath it and it starts to warm you up. It's definitely worth, if you're gonna do it regularly, it's definitely worth it.
See, last time when I did my dip, I just ran home because the restrictions weren't in then. And I met another lady who knew what she was doing. She swims in the bay, and then another guy. Because we were allowed to meet then, and he and I went in, and then I just said to, I did all the small talk before, and I was like, I'm not hanging around after, I'm just gonna get home. So I just ran home.
That's amazing that you can. I have to get straight in the car afterwards and put the heater on, and then warm up, have a hot drink. You just got to be really mindful of how long you're in the water. If you're getting too cold, because when you get in the water, you start to warm up, so you don't really realise what your core temperature is doing until you get out. It's about 10 minutes after you get out of the water where your temperature properly drops.
You've got to be so careful, haven't you? That's the thing. It's just making sure you don't just go off on your own and
be with
someone quite experienced. Who knows?
Another thing that's really handy to have if you're going to do it again is get a big pink or orange, mine's pink, buoy that you clip around your waist and it floats behind you.
So I've,
if you get into any difficulty, people know exactly where you are in the water, and they can cut, and you can also hold on to it, but that's not really what it's for. It's a bit of both, really.
Yeah, I've seen those. They're like, you can put all your kit in as well, can't you? Carry it around. The same thing, it mounts up like everything. It does mount up, doesn't it? But I think it depends. My husband, it's like, is it going to be a fad? But I would like to do more of it. So you're a bit of an inspiration as far as
I don't think once you really get into it and it becomes a routine, it isn't a fad, because you don't want to stop doing it. I do believe that once you really get into it, and I know from talking when we're allowed to talk to people who are around the lake that I do it in, that you're hooked.
I can't. Well, I'm looking forward to trying it, but it's freezing. It's a lovely day today, but it's so cold. I'm not going to be.
Yeah, at the moment, I didn't go. Oh, I couldn't go last weekend, which I was actually quite glad of, because there was proper, you couldn't swim. It was ice. The lake was frozen. So you weren't even able to swim, even if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But I was very glad about that, because it was so cold last weekend that I thought actually I might have bottled it.
So what's next for you, Sarah?
Just getting through, I think. I can't wait to start doing my in-person classes again one day. I would like to think that I get to get married this year, but we'll see. And I just want to start seeing the world again. More than anything, the only hope I have for this year is that everybody that I love stays healthy, that we make it through, and that at the end of it, we can all have a massive hug and a fancy dress party.
Yeah. And what are you most proud of?
What am I most proud of? I don't know. I'm really proud that I got a book published.
I think you should be very proud of that.
I don't know really. It's a good question. Ask me in 20 years' time. I want to achieve more. Okay. My accent is starting to mimic yours, by the way, Jules. Have you noticed?
No, is it?
It always happens. Yeah, this always happens. I notice it in myself when I'm around people with accents. It happens with Australians, people from Birmingham, and Liverpoolians.
It's hard, isn't it? We were talking about it when we come on. I felt teaching this week that I felt my voice become extremely brummy, but I've been watching Peaky Blinders again. And I've mentioned Peaky Blinders on the podcast before. We had a bit of a break from it, but we're back onto it. And I felt I think we're on series 3. So we're still right in the depths of it all.
Ooh, and, that's great.
Yeah. And it's definitely follows, like it ups my brumminess, I think.
Yeah. I do tend to find myself mimicking people's accents by accident.
It's not good, is it? Because people might think you're being a bit funny, but I think it's only natural.
I think it is a human, a human trait, I suppose, trying to want, I don't know. I do, though.
Anyway. There'll be some sort of deep sociological thing there where you need to be like...
An evolutionary thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll leave it there. That's not our area of expertise, is it? I think we've delved into something there. So if you weren't a yoga teacher, Sarah, what would you be?
I'd be... I'd get another novel published.
Don't blame yoga for your lack of novel publishing.
No, I'm not. I'm blaming how hard it is. Maybe my novel's not good enough. No, I'm happy with what I have. I just would like to get more of it, I suppose.
Well, we're moving on now to the quick fire questions.
Oh, right. Okay.
So just come into whatever comes to mind. We'll start. Late to bed or early to rise?
Neither. I'm a sleepaholic. I love early in bed, late to get up. I'm a sloth.
What's the oddest thing in your handbag?
Oh, gosh.
Remember when you had a handbag and you had to carry them around when you left the
house? I've not used a handbag for a long time. I tell you what I always have in my handbag, my passport.
Well, that follows for you. That's good. Yeah. Who do you look up to?
Who do I look up to? Lots of people. Well, at the moment, people like... explorers and adventurers, I think. Like people at the moment, like Ross Edgley, he's the guy, I think it's Ross Edgley, he's the guy who swam around the UK. Was the first guy to swim all the way around the UK. At one point, he had a jellyfish stuck on his face. Ugh. He's amazing. Wim Hof's amazing. People who are adventurous, people who do amazing things with their bodies.
What's your favourite film?
My favourite film, that depends on the day, that.
Quick fire. Come
breakfast
on.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
What, 10 being cool?
Yeah.
2.
Mountainside or lakeside?
Ooh. Lakeside.
Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio?
For what?
That's not part of the question.
Tom Hanks.
What's your star sign?
Aquarius.
Who would you swap lives with just for a day?
Ross Edgley.
Countryside or city?
Countryside.
If you owned a yacht, what would you call it?
Oh God. Let's say, I don't know. This is not quick fire, is it? I don't know. Ross Hensley.
Oh, Sarah, that's so funny. What's at the top of your bucket list?
Top of my bucket list.
Do you say Ross Edgley again?
Getting to number 194 of the, I think, or 92 of the countries in the world. Seeing all the countries.
What? So you describe your baddest and brightest leggings.
I've got a pair of mermaid ones that are mermaid scales in green, and I've got some sunrise ones.
We've covered this already. Favourite place in the whole wide world?
To pick one place, Abersoch in Wales.
Favourite yoga pose?
Tree and nice. Pigeon.
Well, you're only allowed one, but...
Okay, tree phase.
It was quick fire, so tree.
I know, it wasn't quick. There's nothing quick about that fire, was there?
No.
It was more like a...
I'm not even going to edit it. I could, like, edit out the pauses, but that's so funny. I'm so glad you explained who Ross... Is it Ross or Russ Edgley? I'm so glad you said who that was before, because imagine if we... I'd never heard of him.
He's awesome. He goes swimming at an open water place near me, so...
I'm slightly worried you're going to start stalking him.
I might start stalking him, actually, yeah. Just maybe I've got Ross Edgley Tourette's now. Ross Edgley!
And is that the goal, then, to visit all countries?
I would love to. I mean, I know some of them are really dangerous, but maybe we get to a point in the future where there's world peace and no more hunger and you can go anywhere. Let's dream.
So thank you so much for chatting to me, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
To having a catch up with you and to hear more about your world.
Yeah, it's been lovely chatting to you as well.
And how do listeners contact you?
They can find me on Facebook at Serenity Yoga Lim.
So that's S-A-R-E-N-I-T-Y.
Yeah, so Serenity. It's a pun on my name, but some people just think I've made a typo. It's a bit sad, really.
Yeah, Sarah, Serenity.
Yeah. Serenity, yeah.
Oh, so please contact Sarah, tell her what you thought of the podcast, and if you've got any questions for her, I'm sure she'll be happy to answer them.
Yeah, or don't tell me what you thought of the podcast.
Sarah. Oh, thanks, Sarah.
Lovely to see you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to That Yoga Woman's podcast with me, Jules Buchanan. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it, share it on social media, rate it, write a nice review, and subscribe to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Links and information can be found on the episode page in the podcast section of my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/podcast. If you'd like to show some support for the podcast, you can do that through PayPal. The donation link is www.paypal.me/thatyogawoman. The last thing I'll mention is my line of organic cotton yoga-inspired tops. I designed a small range of vest tees and sweatshirts that are perfect to teach or do yoga in. Have a look online, check out my shop on my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/shop. Have a look around my store and make an order. See you soon.